Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritya.
Naram Chaiva Narottamam.
Daivam Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayet. Nasta Prayeshva Bhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Sloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naistiki. Reading this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 4, Text 17 and 18. Bhautikanam cha bhavanam. Shakti rasam cha tatritam. Ashradhatanam nisatpan. Durmedhan vasita yusaha. Durbhagam sajanan viksya. Munir divyena chakshusa. Sarva varnashramanam yat. Dadhau yutam amogadrik. Please check. Bhautikanam cha bhavanam. Shakti rasam cha tatritam. Ashradhatanam nisatvam. Medam rasikayusaha. Bhautikanam cha bhavanam. Shakti hatsam chatatritam. Asraddhanam nishattam. Dumedhan harshita yusaha. Durbhagam sajanam viksya. Muni-divina-chakshita. Sarva-varnasya-manam-yat. Dajya-hitam-amogadrik. Bhautikanam-cha-bhavanam. Shakti-rasam-cha-tatitam. Ashradhadhanam nishatvam. Durmedhan rasita yusha. Durbhagam sajanam viksya. Munir divyena chakshusha. Sarva varnasramanam yad. Dadhyahitam amogadrik. And read the synonyms together. The one can say. Bhautikanam cha, also of everything that is made of matter. Bhavanam, actions. Shakti rasam cha, and deterioration of natural power. Tatritam, rendered by that, Ashradhanan, of the favorite, Nishatvan, impatient, due to want of the mode of goodness, Durmedhan, dull witted. Rasita, reduced. Ayushaha, a duration of life. Durbagancha, also the unlucky. Janan, people in general. Vikshya, by seeing. Muni, the Muni. Divyena, by transcendental. Chakshusha, vision. Sarva, all. Varnashramanam, of all statuses and orders of life. Yat, what? Dadyau, contemplated. Hitam, welfare. Amogadrik, one who is fully equipped in knowledge. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The great sage who is fully equipped in knowledge could see through his transcendental vision the deterioration of everything material due to the influence of the age. He could also see that the faithless people in general would be reduced in duration of life and would be impatient due to lack of goodness. Thus he contemplated for the welfare of men in all statuses and orders of life. Purport. The unmanifested forces of time are so powerful that they reduce all matter to oblivion in due course. In Kali Yuga, the last millennium of a round of four millenniums, the power of all material objects deteriorates by the influence of time. In this age, the duration of the material body of the people in general is much reduced. The duration of the material body is much reduced, and so is memory. The action of matter also has not so much incentive. The land does not produce food grains in the same proportions as it did in other ages. The cow does not give as much milk as it used to give formerly. The production of vegetables and fruits is less than before. As such, all living beings, both men and animals, do not have sumptuous, nourishing food. Due to want of so many necessities of life, naturally the duration of life is reduced, the memory is short, intelligence is meager, mutual dealings are full of hypocrisy, and so on. The great sage Vyasadeva could see this by his transcendental vision. As an astrologer can see the future fate of a man, or an astronomer can foretell the solar and lunar eclipses, those liberated souls who can see through the scriptures can foretell the future of all mankind. They can see this due to their sharp vision of spiritual attainment. And all such transcendentalists who are naturally devotees of the Lord are always eager to render welfare service to the people in general. They are the real friends of the people in general, not the so-called public leaders who are unable to see what is going to happen 5 minutes ahead. In this age, the people in general, as well as their so-called leaders, are all unlucky fellows, faithless in spiritual knowledge, and influenced by the age of Kali. They are always disturbed by various diseases. For example, in the present age, there are so many TB, tuberculosis patients, and TB hospitals. But formerly, this was not so, because the time was not so unfavorable. The unfortunate men of this age are always reluctant to give a reception to the transcendentalists, who are representatives of Srila Vyasadeva, and selfless workers, always busy in planning something which may help everyone in all statuses and orders of life. The greatest philanthropists are those transcendentalists who represent the mission of Vyas, Narada, Madhva, Chaitanya, Rupa, Saraswati, etc. They are all one and the same. The personalities may be different, but the aim of the mission is one and the same, namely to deliver the fallen souls back home, back to Godhead. The great sage who was fully equipped in knowledge could see through his transcendental vision the deterioration of everything material due to the influence of the age. He could also see that the faithless people in general would be reduced in duration of life and would be impatient due to lack of goodness. Thus he contemplated for the welfare of men in all statuses and orders of life. The Srimad Bhagavatam is such beautiful literature, the way it's all set up. You know, Srila Prabhupada told the story of a play called Shah Jahan, remember? Shah Jahan was a great king who built the Taj Mahal. And in his elder son, or one of his sons, became a little crooked and imprisoned him and took the kingdom. He wanted to build another memorial for himself out of black marble. That was the idea. He commemorated his wife, his late wife, and one in the Taj Mahal. Then he was going to build another, and the treasury would be so strained that the son was unwilling to tolerate that. So he killed a brother and formed a coup and took the kingdom and then put his father in a prison. And his one concession was that the prison had a window through which he could see the Taj Mahal. So this whole play actually is about mostly about the activities of his son, Aurangzeb. But the title of the play is Shah Jahan, about the king. So the author, I believe it was Mr. Roy, was asked, why did he call it Shah Jahan when it's mostly about Aurangzeb? And he said, well, the author of a book has the right to title it as he wants because he knows the meaning, the inner meaning of the book. So others may try to penetrate that, but the author actually knows what's going on and what his purpose is. So it is with Srila Vyasadeva here. This is a beautiful structure for Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, we're reading the first canto now. And it begins with an invocation, and then the story of the sages at Naimi Sharanya and their questions, and then Sutta beginning to answer them. You know, the third chapter is dedicated to answering this one question about the avatars. So now in the fourth chapter, we're reading about Vyas. Now, why would this come at this point? Well, this is the author disclosing his role in production of the book, why the book was written, how it came to be written. Again, beautiful literature, just setting up the whole story, not jumping into it right off the bat, but setting it up as to why the Bhagavatam is written in the way it is, why it is so important. This naturally belongs at the beginning of the book, to convince the reader of the value of the book. So who is the author of Srimad Bhagavatam?
Vyasadeva.
And who is being written about here?
Vyasadeva.
So who's writing about Vyasadeva?
Vyasadeva. Now, spoken by Sutta Goswami. But then Vyasadeva, when he wrote, he compiled, he added everything.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Sutta is describing, but Vyasa is writing. And so Vyasa is actually writing about himself here. Right? But he's writing about himself in the third person. And he's writing about himself in a rather complimentary way. The great sage. But he is a great sage. He has to say he's a great sage because he is. It's just how it is. remember in the second verse, is it? Maho Muni Krite Kimba Paraya Ishvara. He also describes this Bhagavatam is the fruit, mature fruit of the great sage, Mahamuni, Srila Vyasa. So he, in various places, he's describing himself as a great sage. But then in other places, he describes himself in somewhat less flattering way. Like when his son, Shukadeva, was leaving home, walking naked past all the ladies who were bathing, and they didn't flinch. But then when Vyasa came by, they all covered up. And although he was chasing his son, he had to stop and ask, why did you... You know, why this double standard? And they said, well, your son was completely above the bodily platform, but you're not quite there. So he writes about himself in these various descriptive ways. It's just like in the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, the author is Satsvarupa Goswami, but he's also a character in the events that take place. So he writes about himself, but as Steve. And Steve brought a mango, Steve went to work, Steve wanted to quit his job. He's talking about himself in the third person, but he was actually the person. So in the same way Vyasa is talking about himself, because he is an important part of the whole story of Srimad Bhagavatam, but talking about himself. He never says, I did this and I did that. You know, not once does he indicate that. So this is one of the qualities of the great sage. But he's explaining how he came to write Srimad Bhagavatam. And again, this is to convince us, the reader, about its value and its importance. So at this stage, he is able to foresee the anomalies coming. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, this is one of the qualifications of a great sage. That he can see through the eyes of scripture what is going to happen. Srila Prabhupada was once asked by a gentleman, can you tell me my future? As if he was an astrologer. And he said, yes, you will grow old and die. So this is an obvious thing to everybody, that is our fate, that is the fate of our body. last night a friend was sharing with me some recording of Dravanaksha Prabhu before he left this world, and he was speaking like this. He's saying, this is just a few days before he passed away, and he said, now, all these things I thought were so important to me, all these things I liked and I didn't like, now I'm seeing they just mean nothing. They're absolutely just vanishing and disappearing. Was his realization. It was very, very profound. So we also know this, but at the same time we're engaged in so many things in our lives, and we have to be. It's our responsibility. Yet the philosopher, Srila Prabhupada said, is someone who keeps death in their front. Keep death in their front. Now my mother, who is 100, she always said, your philosophy of Krishna consciousness is so morbid. He's talking about death and old age and disease. She has had the pleasure, living so long, to see attend the funerals of nearly all of her friends. So, and she has not yet become a devotee. One of my friends said, if she lives to be 108, maybe she'll become a devotee. The point is that we can all see these inevitable disasters in our lives coming up. Srila Prabhupada told a story about a man who was up in a tree sawing a branch off, but he was sitting on the branch away from the trunk, so he was sawing between himself and the trunk. And so another man came down and said, you know, if you keep doing that, you're going to fall. And the man said, leave me alone. And then he sawed and he fell. And when he got up, he said, oh my God, you're a great astrologer. How could you know the future so clearly? So Srila Vyasadeva could see. What is it? Anarto pasanam sakshat bhakti yoga adhoksita. That pure devotional service can relieve the miseries of a material life. But lokasya janato vidvan. The mass of people do not understand this fact. Therefore, Chakra's Samhita Samhita, that the learned Vyas compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam just for those people, those unfortunate people. Particularly, he saw how the earth does not nourish people the way it did. Particularly, he saw how people's duration of life, intelligence, and so forth would be reduced. And he saw how diseases would become very prominent. Of course, we're seeing that right now, how this disease that is spreading around the world, everyone is concerned. I just returned from Mayapur, and there I caught a case of the coronavirus. The coronavirus, the mercy virus. And so that you could also be infected, I brought back some soil for everybody who wanted to take a pinch. Take out some soil from the yoga peak, the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. I'd like to rub a little on your head, just a bit. So please could pass that around.
I should go and dust everyone.
Whatever you want, you just pass it around.
Just
So this kind of infection of Krishna consciousness is actually still going on around the world. Mukhya Prabhu asked me please to talk a little about the meetings in Mayapur. So I could do that if you wish, with some of the things that happened. Just before we go on, any comments on the shloka or the purport? Yes, could we come to you?
When Srila Vyasadeva was speaking about the deterioration of the ages and what was taking place, in terms of the age of everyone, the size of all beings are being reduced also. Mm. But it seems like it's not so much highlighted in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is how the scientists kind of get away with, all the findings of the large species and stuff, because they cannot account how that has happened, But all beings are reduced in size also.
All beings are reduced in size. Yes, he said, for example, Lord Chaitanya was very, very tall. Right?
7 feet
tall.
What
is that? Yes, and Muchikunda, when he came out of his long sleep, he saw everybody. Everyone is so short. Yes, it's interesting how Prabhupada is connecting that to the earth, producing less food, therefore people have a smaller duration, smaller physical being. Yes, in the Satyayuga, in the 11th canto, there's a nice description about how there was no need for varnashram, therefore everybody was of the same order. Thank you. Everyone is of the same caste, you could say, or varna and ashram. And Sariputta Prabhu used to say that the Bible talks about the Garden of Eden. You know, in the Garden of Eden, everybody was cared for by nature, and no one had any need to work or have any possessions. He said this is like the Satyayuga. And then the first thing that happened after Adam and Eve get kicked out of the garden is their sons start agriculture. And agriculture means you have to claim, this is my land now, cultivate. So that was the loss from the earlier ages. Now this idea of possession, first thing that symptomized the loss of Satyayuga, loss of goodness. Because as people had that understanding that life is temporary and life is not meant for enjoying this world.
Chanakya Pandit says, if you want to enjoy life with sense gratification, you should think you lead a long life.
Mm. Always meditate, I have a long life. And he said, if you want to advance in spiritual life, you should think that you may die tomorrow. Mm. So then you can advance.
Then you can advance. That's nice. In Mayapur, I'd like to visit the samadhis of Kamal Krishna Goswami and Bhakti Tirtha Mara. And I always will see them as elders, mentors, seniors, you know. But then I look at the dates, and they were only 54, 55 years old. On my good days, I can remember when I was 54 or 55. They did so much. So Krishna took them at this very young age, and it's actually very auspicious to be able to leave this world in Krishna consciousness, as they did.
Well, so my question is, like, Mahaprabhu lived only 48 years. Mm-hmm. Shankaracharya lived only 31 years. Mm-hmm. Long life doesn't mean really valuable if you know Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, that's very true. It doesn't matter. It's always too late to take up Krishna consciousness, but it's never too early. The matter is how senior one is in terms of one's commitment and surrender to Krishna. There was a cartoon somebody had showed. So two devotees are talking, they have a ghee lamp, and the one devotee is explaining to the other, take it to the white seekers first, the gray seekers next, and then the brown seekers. So we tend to look at, yes, age equals seniority, but just like Shukadeva Goswami was a young, very young man. And when he entered the assembly of all these sages, all these elder sages, even his father, they immediately recognized his spiritual qualifications. So one need not live a long life if one is productive. This is the point. And remember, Bhishma was the ringleader of the Vasus, mm-hmm. who stole the Kamadhenu cow. And so they were all cursed to take birth in the material world. And then they begged for reduction. So everyone got a reduction except Bhishma. And Bhishma, no, you were the ringleader. His name was Boo. He said, you have to stay in the material world for a very long life. So people aspire for a very long life in this world. It's funny. As I mentioned, my mother's 100. One out of 50,000 people lives to be 100 years old.
Wow.
So it's a rare thing. But then what do you really get out of it? It's just... It is not a great boon.
Well, if she got a Krishna conscious son.
Yeah, I was always told her, Mom, I'm just doing this for you. She doesn't believe it. Anyway. Thank you very much. All right. So, any other comments about the verse in purport?
Yeah.
And so I'll go on to a few minutes just about what happened in Mayapur this year. An Govinda Prabhu was there. And who else? Panchatava Prabhu, your wife, was there. So this the best part of the experience for me was to go to the ISKCON Leadership Sangha, other than Sesha Prabhu being there, of course. ISKCON Leadership Sangha happens every other year, and it's an assembly of devotees presenting seminars on various topics under a certain theme. So the theme this year was the future of ISKCON. So all of these seminars were prepared to present different aspects of ISKCON's development and future. So there were 75 seminars. You could attend a maximum of 28, four a day over over a week. So the immediate problem is which ones to choose. There are just so many good ones. It was really, really difficult. This was the first time I'd been there, and this was my overwhelming impression. Well, I'd like to attend so many of these, I just can't make. I really have to choose. So I picked a couple of ones that I really enjoyed that I wanted to share with you, if that's all right. The first one was called How to Mess Up Your Life with Varnashram Dharma. And so the devotee Kunteya Prabhu presented very nicely how he said, if you don't remember anything else from the seminar, remember one word: interdependent. Varnashram is interdependent. If any of the pieces are going to be there, all the pieces have to be there. Otherwise, one piece out of context doesn't work. He gave the example of child marriage, that even 125 years ago, in Srila Prabhupada's time, child marriage was a commonly accepted thing. He was married to a girl of 11, I believe, and he wanted his daughters married by his wife wanted their daughters married by the time they were 12 or 13. This was socially accepted and supported, and therefore it was functional within that social context. But to take child marriage out of that context and try to implement it would be illegal today, right? So Srila Prabhupada writes about this elsewhere in the first canto, how Maharaj Yudhisthira was able to perform his yagyas or do his service because it was supported by all the people in the society. So to take something out of context, polygamy, child marriage, any number of things, is unsupported by the rest of society. And therefore, that's how you mess up your life with Varnashram, basically. And try to take something, implement it when you're not in a social context. There's a nice story in this regard about a peasant in Russia. So in this particular village in Russia, all the rich people had fur coats, and the poor peasants did not. So this one peasant was determined, I'm going to get a fur coat, I've got to get a fur coat. It became the mission of his life. So he scrimped and saved, and he sold this and sold that. Finally, he was able to buy his fur coat. And he put it on, he walked out in the town square, and everyone started laughing. Because they could see that underneath his fur coat, he was naked. He had nothing else left. So if we say, this part is our Varnashram, see, when we don't have anything behind it, we're like that peasant. It's just laughable. So one example of this is, you know, there's so many social things in Varnashram, how the Brahmins should be supported by the Kshatriyas, and how the Vaishyas should give money to the willingly to the Kshatriyas, and how the Kshatriyas should be Rajarshi, saintly, you know, leaders. So these are all the hard things, you know, to implement in Varnashram. Try to get the leaders, the politicians, to be saintly, you know, or to try to get the Brahmins to be so qualified that people will listen to them and take their advice. These are the hard things. But some people want to say, well, let's implement Varnashram, but we'll start with the easy ones, the women and the children. We will demand a Varnashram standard from these more vulnerable sections of society. So this is an example of taking something out of context when it's not really supported in a broad way. So that was a really nice and relishable seminar. There are so many, but one other that really stuck in my mind is the seminar on the history of the GBC. It was very telling. I've had the opportunity to work with the GBC in various capacities over the years, and so I've seen it, and I know to many devotees it's just like, I don't know, just this kind of nebulous thing. Some devotees really hate it. Most devotees are kind of indifferent to it. It's kind of irrelevant to what is the GBC. So the GBC holds this mantle of authority in continuing the disciplic succession from Srila Prabhupada. That's their responsibility. And it is actually, just by any objective standards, it's a hell of a job. It's a long, grueling hour, so many problems. You don't get paid anything. So these devotees do it out of their sincerity. It's not very prestigious. It doesn't really get you a lot of respect. It does get you a lot of criticism. So I appreciate these devotees going on year after year. So in the early years of the GBC, Srila Prabhupada formed it, and he was able to help train the members, which was something very valuable because his guru wanted a GBC but did not have the opportunity to put it in place. So Prabhupada established the GBC, he adjusted it, adjusted it again. Then they passed, in 1976, they passed some resolutions that were so off the wall that he just, he reprimanded them, made them undo all these resolutions. So he trained them. Another point, he disbanded the whole GBC when they were trying to centralize the corporation in America. He just disbanded them, he was so disgusted. So these were kind of good lessons for the GBC. But when he left this world, the young men on the GBC were people I today would have questions about loaning my car keys to. You know, and he left the whole movement in their care, and they didn't really have a lot of worldly experience or spiritual experience. So it was actually quite tenuous. They made a lot of mistakes and caused a lot of devotees to lose faith. But somehow they have persevered. So the seminar was going through these various stages. You know, the formative years with Prabhupada, then the zonal acharya years when there was all this chaos and confusion. Then the GBC reasserting itself in the mid-80s. And then over the last 15 years, there's been a period of attempting to professionalize the GBC. So that's going on now, and that's what I wanted to share with you, because it is nice to see that in perspective, that the GBC has been very much an ad hoc entity, and everyone trying their best to do things, to gain experience. But now there are steps being taken for the future, so that the GBC can really evolve into a more efficient and appropriate leadership body. You know, one of the things about a committee is that it can't do anything. One of the bad things is that it can't do anything very fast. Committee of like 35 strong-minded people who all want to speak at the same time. You know, nothing can happen very fast. But the good part about a committee is that nothing can happen very fast. You know, so the essential part of Krishna consciousness stays the same, even though adjustments can be maddeningly frustrating. Can't even say it. So the professionalism of the GBC, the professionalization of the GBC, has several facets, and I know a lot of devotees may not know about these things. One is a GBC college. Now there is a training procedure for people who want to start entering into ISKCON leadership. The GBC College is a one-year course, about a month on site, and then about 11 months online. And various fields of leadership knowledge are taught by various experts. And there are several hundred graduates at this point. So that's a big step for the future. And that graduates can then take lower-level leadership roles and eventually evolve to being GBC members if they desire. But now it's required that you have to have gone through the GBC college in order to be on the GBC. Like a common sense step, right? But, you know, it only took 50 years, but we figured it out. And then another another nice development is that the zones, you know, these zones have been hodgepodge all over the world, the GBC zones. And so those are now becoming consolidated into about 40 around the world. And many of the current GBC are not going to be able to restrict themselves to that particular zone in this lifetime. But when they're replaced, then their replacement will have just that contiguous geographical zone. There are 40 all over the world. There are 5 in America and in North America. And India wants about 387. So they're negotiating how many zones there will be in India. But roughly it'll come out to about 40. So already about a dozen GBCs are assigned to these zones, and they are just now confining their activities to these particular geographical regions. Now the GBC are mostly in their 70s, late 60s or 70s, many retirements, some have passed away, others are having health challenges. Gradually new people are coming on. And that is a very positive thing. So it's still very slow to change anything. So one of the big issues this year was about the Vaishnavi Diksha Gurus, whether women could initiate. In the midterm meetings last year, in October, this is, by the way, another professionalism for the GBC, having 2 meetings a year instead of 1. So in October, at the midterm meetings, they passed a resolution that women can give Diksha if they're 55 and if they are approved by the local areas. So the local areas would have choices by continent whether or not women could initiate, because the devotees in India did not want it, almost unanimously. The devotees in North America wanted it, almost unanimously. So the GBC's idea was to, all right, let regions decide. But the devotees in India protested so strongly that they said, no, this resolution is wrong, it should be rescinded. So the GBC reopened the matter, and they heard arguments about whether or why the resolution should be rescinded. And they heard from both sides and ultimately decided to give it to delay it yet again so that there could be time for possible future or additional restrictions, such as women initiating only women, something like that. So there is the postponement until October of this year, in which they resolved to make a final once and for all decision, but the movement to rescind the resolution was defeated, which means the resolution still stands. So it's just a matter of exactly what restrictions will be there. That was the outcome of that issue. There's going to be more dialogue with the Indian leaders, and then the final decision in October. There were other issues. What's that?
April.
Well, this dialogue is in April, but the resolution will be reviewed in Pune. That was what they had said. I got to tell Seisha Prabhu these things. Isn't it? I thought that was the resolution. I said, okay, we're going to talk in April, but we'll make a final decision in October. No? Did I miss something? In any case, another professional aspect of the GBC, a new one, is one that actually Srila Prabhupada implemented but was lost. And that was a check and balance for the GBC call that was previously done by the temple presidents. The temple presidents used to meet after the GBC. They would go through the resolutions. If they didn't like any of them, they'd send them back to the GBC. And then the GBC would have to vote on them in a higher percentage for them to be implemented. So that became unwieldy after there were hundreds of temple presidents. And so the GBC organized an advisory body called the Sabha, which has that same function. After the meetings, the Sabha goes through, reviews all the resolutions, sends back any ones that they don't support. And then the GBC has 30 days to decide what to do. So that gives a check and balance to the GBC, a secondary voice. So these are some of the things that have made the GBC a little more professional. Any questions after the GBC?
How is the Sabha comprised? How do you get on the Sabha? Who's on the Sabha? What are the term limits of the Sabha? What's the percentage on the Sabha that need to write to vote that this is rejected.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good questions from a lawyer. So, simple majority is required. Term is 4 years. The composition of the sabha is representative. There are 10 devotees selected by the assembly of gurus, sannyasis, and GBCs. There are three youth representatives. Some of you may know Gaurangi Gandharvika, the daughter of Swetha Swarup and Adi Devi, here in Alaska sometimes. Anyway, she's 23. She's one of the members of the sabha, as well as a couple of other very nice young devotees. Five from the women's ministry, five from senior devotees, and then one representative from each continent, or each regional division of this kind, about 10. So it's 35 members altogether. And it's meant to be like that, a parliament, a mixed bag. And it's a nice group. I was asked to serve on that group, so I participated. And it's you know, it's a very functional group, although opinions are quite different. But we have a good leader in Nrisinghananda Prabhu, and we've been able to, we're sending a couple of resolutions back to the GBC this year, ones that we didn't approve. So anyway, it's, I hope that answers your question.
And then what's the percentage?
What's the percentage needed to decline your...
simple majority.
No. So you send it back to the GBC?
Oh, yeah. It used to be two-thirds, but now they just require a simple majority again.
But isn't that what they already had to pass it in the first place?
Yeah. What they're saying is that, okay, we'll discuss it further and take into advisement what the sabha has to say, but we're not willing to commit to it two-thirds.
Uh-huh.
Percentage. Good. I see your question, yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Yes. Ramaraj Prabhu.
Can you tell us something about the chartered management system that we are looking to implement? I heard it was passed in October.
Right. This is an attempt to bring more standardized practices to various entities that use the name ISKCON. And it's a little bit like a franchise in American business, that if you're going to have a franchise for a particular company, you are bound to require to observe certain standards and serve certain recipes, certain procedures, all these things. So this is a first step in an attempt to hold every entity that uses the name ISKCON to a higher and more consistent standard. So I don't know much more about it than that. Maybe Seishu Prabhu could elaborate. Is that sufficient? Okay. Okay. Now, this was approved by the GBC, which is a big step to try to bring a more cohesive presentation to the world. Okay. Any other comments or questions? Yes, Matiji.
You mentioned that we cannot take knowledge out of the context.
Yes.
Get information about exactly what we need to do, because many times, like we also were told that, like you read the knowledge and you have to, even if you don't understand it, you have to like accept it as it is. And then many times I also heard that we have to use then our intelligence then also to decide. But if I don't have the intelligence, then where do I know this like specific like? You know, details about what I should do and what I shouldn't.
Yeah, it's a good question.
It is.
You know, this is a very, very subjective question, so I can only give you a subjective point of view. Is that all right? I like that seminar, How to Mess Up Your Life with Varnashram, because I've seen a lot of devotees mess up their lives with Varnashram. To try to keep some standard artificially, which is not consistent with our nature, creates a conflict in spiritual life that can make Krishna consciousness just seem unattainable. So it's much better to just stick with the very basic things and make sure that those are dealt with nicely. Srila Prabhupada said, if we follow the four regulative principles and chant 16 rounds in a mood of helplessness, then we can go back to Godhead in this lifetime. The other things are details. Everything else is a detail. So some devotees are able to, let's say, keep very high brahminical standards. Some devotees find that difficult. It's not that the person who can't do it is thus disqualified for going back to Godhead. Rupa Goswami said, Yena tena paparina mana Krishna navesha. Somehow or other, think about Krishna. The rules and regulations can come later. So one of the characteristics of people who follow very strict pukka brahminical rigid standards, as Prabhupada wrote to his godbrother in that letter we read. Sometimes it can make the heart a little hard. And thus one's vows are meant to be secret. See? Not to say, I'm observing all the brahminical principles. Are you? So the vows are supposed to be just between us and Krishna. When people quote out of context from Prabhupada's books, well, Prabhupada said this about this particular varnashram practice. It's in Prabhupada's books, therefore we have to do it. See? It may be appropriate for some, but it's not necessarily appropriate for everyone, therefore it's a detail. So the simple answer to your question is don't get hung up in the details. There's a wonderful story of Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan when Akshayananda Swami was the temple president. Very scholarly, kind of reserved person, but he was the temple president. And then this young sannyasi, Hansaduta, came. He was very charismatic, fired up. He was leading the devotees in big kirtans and getting them all fired up. So some of the devotees began saying, why don't we have Hansaduta as the temple president? Hansaduta Swami. So the controversy came to Prabhupada, and he brought the two sannyasis in and just started berating Hansaduta Swami. Why are you here in this temple? Sannyasi means traveling. You're supposed to go out and preach and spread Krishna consciousness. You should go out and travel. And then he turned to Akshayananda, and you stay here and manage Vrindavan. So what is appropriate for one person may not be appropriate for the other. So whatever keeps us happy in Krishna consciousness, if it's not outside of the regulative principles, that really is the best GPS. You know, if something makes us happy, if it's sustainable. My wife likes to say that the highest standard of deity worship is one that you can maintain nicely. So similarly, the highest standard of Krishna consciousness is one you can maintain nicely. If things seem difficult for you, but they're in Prabhupada's books and artificially you feel like you should do it, that'll mess up your life. Better to just be yourself. You know, self-realization means that, finding out who we are for Krishna, which is a beautiful thing. It's a very godlike thing to do, isn't it? If you were God, you think you might do this, like create numerous living entities, each one who could please you in a unique way. So we each have a unique way of pleasing Krishna that is distinct and only personal for ourselves. Finding out what that is self-realization. So I hope that answers your question. Trivikram Akhubu. You don't know
I have a really tough question.
A really tough question. Okay, well, that's why I came here this morning.
Why do you think that there is such disparity between the East and the West in terms of the guruship? I mean, why is it such
Well, I know how to answer that without getting in trouble. Why is there such a disparity on this issue of Vaishnavi Diksha and perhaps other issues? Well, there's less of a disparity than one might think, okay, first to start with. Some very outspoken people are pushing this very hard in India and claiming to represent everybody, but they don't. But they're making a lot of noise. Okay? They say, we have unanimous support, but they really don't. Most people don't care. That's the reality. But Prabhupada writes in the Madhya Leela, and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know, is like the mature fruit of Prabhupada's writing in many respects. He did this after starting ISKCON and had the ability to write his purports from the perspective of having started an international movement. So in the, I think it's chapter 23 of the Madhya Lila, there's a beautiful purport where Srila Prabhupada is talking about renunciation. And he said, one would not teach a person from the West about renunciation in the same way one would teach a person from India. Then, you know, Prabhupada did not like the word impossible. Remember when Rameshwar said, impossible, a word in a fool's dictionary. But in that purport, Prabhupada uses the word impossible. He said, to try to implement one set of cultural values in a different culture is niyamagraha. It's an impossible, and it will just be a cause of difficulty. So that's why, I personally like that GBC resolution. Let individual parts of the world decide on this. Like for deity worship, for example. In India, women are not allowed to do aarti, and in most cases not dress the deities. But in the West, you know, the deity worship would collapse if it weren't for women taking care of the deities. And this standard is different in different parts of the world, and nobody, it's not a big deal. So there needs to be selective application. That's the quality of an international movement. All right. So I'm just going to wrap up very briefly, say a few words about Madhavendra Puri, whose disappearance day is today. You know, we know the disappearance days of these great acharyas, but often not their appearance days. But his great contribution was introducing the ecstatic mood of conjugal love in our sampradaya. On his disappearance bed, he was attended by one disciple, Ishwar Puri, who took great care of him. And then he was visited by another disciple, Ramachandra Puri, who saw him in his ecstatic mood of Radharani, feeling separation from Krishna, and said, Gurudev, why are you lamenting? Brahma Bhuta Prasadatma, Nasochati Nakanchati. Madhavendra Puri chastised him, get away from my sight, go anywhere you want, I don't want to see you. So that was a very instructive pastime about his disappearance. You know? That the mood of the spiritual master may be beyond the comprehension of the disciple. Prabhupada was once asked, I think it was Jadarani who said, Prabhupada, you look very sad in this picture. Prabhupada said, that was a moment of great ecstasy. So Madhavendra Puri chastised Ramachandra Puri very strongly. So this is another instructive lesson. Some devotees can learn by hearing, some by seeing the experience of others, some by learning, by seeing, observing, and then experiencing directly. But some can't learn even with all those things. So for them, the spiritual master has to chastise. But that chastisement is also done out of love. So Madhavendra Puri embraced his disciple Ishwar Puri and blessed him with love of God. I'd like to read this beautiful verse that he was quoting at that time, or he was speaking rather. This is when he wrote, Ayidina Dayadra Natahe Matura Nata Kadavaloksyate Hridayam Twad Alokata Karam Dayita Brahmyati Kim Karomyaham. O my Lord, O most merciful Master, Master of Mathura, when shall I see you again? Because of my not seeing you, my agitated heart has become unsteady. O most beloved one, what shall I do now? This verse was understood only by three people, Madhavendra Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Srimati Radharani. No one else could really understand the mood, but this is what he injected in our society, in our sampradaya. And finally, one of my very favorite verses anywhere is this verse where he talks about what happened when he became a devotee. He said, ever since I have been serving Krishna, all my friends think I'm crazy. My family thinks I'm frustrated. Wealthy people think I'm wasting my time. The wise philosophers think that I'm much too puffed up, know everything. Basically, everybody's fried with me. And still, my mind does not budge an inch from serving the lotus feet of Govinda, even though I'm unable to do it.
Haribol!
Srila Madhavendra Puri ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.